It's Tuesday, the 8th of October, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, a new gas pipeline is intended to bolster Europe's supplies for decades to come, but could it also give Russia a trump card in its ongoing involvement in Ukraine? We'll speak to the chief diplomatic correspondent for the New York Times, Stephen Erlanger.
Well, the concern is that Russia can use this avoidance of Ukraine's pipelines as a way of pressuring Ukraine.
Plus, more shock from Washington as the Trump administration abandons long-standing allies and greenlights Turkey's operation in northern Syria. And Japan shoots for the moon after striking a deal with NASA. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. A gas pipeline known as Nord Stream 2 is intended to bolster the European Union's gas supplies by transporting gas from some of the world's richest reserves directly to markets in the European Union. The origin of the gas, however, lies in Russia. That's leading many critics to question the true nature of Moscow's motives and how it could factor into the ongoing situation in eastern Ukraine. Stephen Erlanger is chief diplomatic correspondent for the New York Times. He joins me on the line from Brussels. Stephen, remind us, what is Nord Stream 2?
Well, Nord Stream 2 doubles the capacity of a pre-existing pipeline that cuts out Ukraine and Poland. It goes directly from Russia to Germany, and it has two implications for critics. You know, one is that it undermines Ukraine's leverage on Russia and keeps Ukraine from getting gas transit fees, which are very important. And secondly, some people argue it makes Germany even more dependent on Russian gas than it has been in the past, and that somehow Germany becomes a sort of hostage. The problem with Nord Stream also is that much of the European Union doesn't like it because of these reasons, and the Germans are being accused of lack of solidarity with neighbors like Poland for going ahead with Nord Stream 2. But they reject all this criticism, even though even inside Germany, it's a sensitive topic politically and also internationally.
On the face of it, Stephen, this should be a story of Europe securing its future energy supplies. But of course, a pipeline connecting the European Union to Russia was always going to come with some political baggage.
Yes, well, the concern is that Russia can use this avoidance of Ukraine's pipelines as a way of pressuring Ukraine. Ukraine is a little less dependent on Russian gas for its own heating, but it is pretty dependent on all these transit fees that they get. And so one of the great advantages for Russia is that by avoiding Ukraine, it's possible for Gazprom, which owns this, to ship its gas cheaper to Europe and cut out the sort of middle country. But of course, don't forget, which you wouldn't, I mean, Russia and Ukraine are in a kind of semi-war right now. Russia annexed Crimea in 2014 and is supporting separatists in the east of Ukraine around Donbass. And so Russia may want to use other kinds of financial leverage on Ukraine to keep it unstable, which seems to be Russian policy.
There are, of course, ongoing efforts to impeach President Trump, not to mention what's sure to be another extremely messy election campaign next year. But even if Trump is facing an uphill battle to remain president, it's still entirely possible that all attempts to remove him from office could fail. Stephen, given the president's record on Ukraine and Russia, Trump remaining president could prove deeply problematic for Ukraine, couldn't it?
I think it's really fascinating. I mean, Ukraine is vulnerable, right? It's caught between this Russia, which wants to keep it from functioning well, which I think would love to bring it back into the fold, and NATO, which has always held out the option of Ukraine joining it. I mean, at one point, Zbigniew Brzezinski used to say that if Ukraine remains independent, then Russia's no longer an empire. So these are the stakes. And what does Ukraine have to depend on? It depends on NATO, depends on the United States, which has been a great supporter of Ukrainian independence, which has spent a lot of money, though so has the European Union, to try to promote reform inside Ukraine. But what President Trump is doing, he had withheld military aid and he had withheld a visit to the White House for the new president, Mr. Zelensky, in return for what he called a favor, which was that Ukraine should dig in an investigative way to two things that affected Trump personally. One was the 2016 election, because Trump has this thing in his head that somehow meddling in the American elections started in Ukraine, not in Russia, which very few people believe. And secondly, Hunter Biden took probably a very ill-advised position as a board member of a private Ukrainian natural gas company. Here we are back to natural gas, for a lot of money. And this, I think, has embarrassed his father and opened up this notion that Mr. Trump has in his head that Ukraine needs to find dirt on Joe Biden.
It's a complicated web of geopolitics, one which we'll be keeping our eyes on. Stephen Erlinger in Brussels, thank you. The White House has given the green light to a Turkish military operation in northern Syria, effectively abandoning Washington's longtime military partners, the Kurds. The move is expected to infuriate many within the US military and amongst Washington's European allies. Holly Dagres is a non-resident fellow at the Atlantic Council and editor of the Iran Source blog.
Well, I think the news came to a shock not just to us, but to the Kurds themselves when the White House issued that statement. And this is a very big problem because the Turks aren't going to be exactly handling the Kurds with kid gloves here. We have to remember that the Turks do not view the Kurds as an ally. They view them essentially as a terrorist organization. And the fact that they're allowing this situation to happen, the United States, that is, means that this is going to be a big problem, not just for the Kurds and the Turks, but probably have regional ramifications, especially the fact that the Kurds are holding all these members of the Islamic State in jail. So what does that mean? Does that mean that the Kurds are going to be kindly handing them over to the Turks? Are they going to be let loose? And I think that itself is a problem because, as you well know, that some of these members of ISIS were actually European nationals initially. And so I think that could be a big problem for all of us here. It's also worth noting there's two Trump Towers in Turkey. And I mean, we don't know exactly what's going on in this conversation, but we have this impeachment inquiry going on. Trump is in desperate need to say that he's done something positive. And if you read the statement, he says he does not want to spend more U.S. taxpayer dollars on this. The U.S. has defeated ISIS. We no longer need to be there. And so for him, this is maybe in a way a sign that he's making a wind of some sort for the U.S. people. And it really depends how the American people look at this. But for him, there's a 2020 election, there's an impeachment inquiry, he has an attention span that's not, arguably, he's fickle-minded. I think for him, it's not even about ramifications in the region. He wants to just do something. And again, going back to, we don't know what was going on this call.
Japan's space agency is stepping up its collaboration with the United States. The plan could see a renewed focus on missions on the moon, with a view to expanding that reach to Mars. Dr. David Whitehouse is an author and space scientist.
It's quite natural that the US and Japan would collaborate on going to the moon, on the return to the moon that President Trump has said should happen before 2024. Japan and the US have been cooperating extensively on the International Space Station. Japan built a whole section of it. And just recently, a Japanese cargo craft arrived bringing spare batteries. So initially, I think it's the cargo craft that's going to be part of the build-up to the next lunar landing, because NASA is going to build a lunar space station near the moon, and that's going to need supply. So Japanese cargo craft is ideal for that. But We could also see Japanese astronauts taking part in moon missions in the future. Japan has been, as I say, a major partner in the International Space Station. They know they've had astronauts there. They know about living and working in space and overcoming the problems you need to be in space. So when it comes to sending astronauts to the Lunar Gateway, where they will assemble before landing on the lunar surface, then Japanese astronauts and the whole Japanese space agency has the experience to fit in very nicely with that. Also, they bring all the technical requirements they need, but also politically, President Trump's goal to have astronauts back on the moon by 2024 could be precarious, particularly if he doesn't win next year, the election. So internationalizing the whole effort and bringing on Japan and Europe and other nations makes the thing a bit more stable and long-term.
Finally today is Emmanuel Macron, Europe's new cheerleader in chief. Monocle's editorial team reflects on the EU's changing cast of characters.
Hands up if you remember the Greek Euro referendum in 2015. Back then, it was Angela Merkel facing off with Alexis Tsipras, a brash, newly elected prime minister who thought the threat of a Euro exit could change the conditions of Greece's EU bailout deal. After going a few late-night negotiating rounds with Merkel, he wound up accepting the bailout's terms rather than risk a disastrous no-deal exit. Only the characters have changed as we enter, perhaps, the final throes of Britain's Brexit campaign. This time, the brash PM demanding new terms is Boris Johnson, facing off with France's Emmanuel Macron, who says the EU will be making a decision on Britain's fate by the end of the week. Why not Merkel in the lead? It's a sign of shifting powers in Europe, sure, but the reality is also that Macron has taken up the bad cop mantle on Brexit that Merkel held on Greece. This time, France is the country more determined, or stubborn, depending on your point of view, not to bend the EU's founding principles to give Johnson what he wants, just like Germany was when it came down to the EU's budget rules with Greece. One difference: Macron is unlikely to receive the same blowback from his European colleagues that Merkel got for her tough approach to Greece. Why not? Is there more solidarity with Greece than with Britain? Or is there more trust in France's EU vision than Germany's? Diplomats, discuss.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Ryland. The Monocle Minute returns on Wednesday.